Yeah, the best way it was described to me is it just provides options for people to meet you wherever you're at, right? Just the options. You have something delicious no matter where you're at, and you get to decide. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Hello, and welcome to Food Crush, the On Milwaukee podcast for people who eat or drink both. I am your co-host, Matt Miller, culture editor at onmilwaukee.com, and I am joined, as always, by Lori Frederick at onmilwaukee.com. How are you doing today, Lori?
Cheers.
I'm doing Cheers.
Well. I'm doing well. I mean, I'm drinking water, so that's nothing exciting, but I'm staying hydrated, so.
I am drinking a water with Mio in it, which has been a saving grace for me since I ditched soda all those years ago.
Water with Mio has been your saving grace?
I'm sure it's just, yeah, because it's, you know, really? It's a little bit more flavor than water and allegedly sugar-free, but I'm sure there's something else slowly and surely killing me in it. So it's great.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine. So, but we're here to talk. We're here to talk to some folks who make beverages, none of which, I don't think any of the ingredients in which are in these beverages should kill you. Even slowly.
That's not. Don't lead. I'm no marketing expert. Don't lead with that. Don't make that your catchphrase.
Like nothing in these beverages will kill you.
Siren Shrub.
Not a good sales pitch, right? So, no. Without further ado, we are here today with Minnie McCord and Lane Cozzolino of Siren Shrubs,
which won't kill you.
Which is. And it's a company. I didn't do my homework. You guys have been around for how many years? A few.
Yeah, so 4.5.
Okay, so yeah, hey. So you're not quite at that 5-year mark, which is always like, oh, the
we
5 years,
round
you know,
up.
Then
I
you breathe, then you,
up.
Yeah. So I still think of you as being relatively new, but you've done a lot in the past 4.5 years. And that's part of, I think, what we want to talk about, because there may be people who listening who don't know what shrubs are, you know, aside from maybe the greenery that's growing outside of their house.
Or the Monty Python.
Yeah. The shrubbery.
Shrubberies. Yes. We don't know shrubberies here.
You guys should also start a company that does herring, and you can cover all the Monty Python references all at once.
There we go.
Don't take advice from me.
And with things that don't kill you, because you're not dead yet.
That don't kill you. Right. This is important. We got to keep that going as the brand.
Okay. All right.
We should have consulted with you guys much earlier on about our branding. You know?
The opposite. You should never consult me on anything. I will become a money pit of a human being.
Apparently not so good at that.
So, let's start with kind of, I guess, what would kind of be like the elevator pitch of what Siren Shrubs is? How would you kind of quick describe what it is to people who don't know?
Yeah, so shrubs are just 3 ingredients. It's organic apple cider vinegar, organic cane sugar or maple syrup, and then a fruit, root, or herb. And they're actually from like the 1800s. So they're an old-timey beverage. People used to use it as a method of preservation. And now you just see them in craft cocktails and non-alcoholic drinks. You use them a splash at a time to create amazing, delicious, tasty beverages with or without alcohol.
Interesting.
See, that's a way better sales pitch.
And it won't kill you. Yeah.
And it won't kill you.
Yeah, that's a bonus. That's a bonus.
So for an idiot like me, they're kind of similar in some way to bitters then a little bit? Or am I on the right track with that description or no?
Sort of. I think the easiest way to think about them is like a tangy simple syrup. So if you think about them like that, they're a little more robust than bitters. You use more than you would bitters. It's not a dropper situation. It's more like an ounce at a time.
Okay.
Yeah. Similar in the way that it's a tincture. It's interesting. It's complex tasting. It elevates your drinks really simply. So you're not on the wrong track.
Well, that's good. So how did you two come upon shrubs then? How did you come upon this? Because this is obviously, you know, this isn't, you know, something that, you know, I'd go to like the casual pub down the street and maybe like, ah, yes, a shrub. So they might now.
For a long time, shrubs were kind of sleeping, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
like people just forgot.
Honestly, like I was really like taken aback when I learned about shrubs from a New York Times article in 2015. And I was like, wait, what? How do I not know about this? I know about food and drinks. Like, I know about stuff. And then I had no idea what that was. And like, and made one. And Mindy and I were in doing an event together with my husband. And we like had it. And I think, I don't know, we made cocktails out of it. And it was like, oh, this is interesting. This is good. And, but it wasn't its moment for us. And then when I got pregnant, my husband bought me a like sampler pack to make mocktails with so that I could have an alcohol replacement of a company out of Michigan. And that was in 2016. And then we started to drink them. And like Mindy and I were always, like I said, food people before this. And we love to pickle. We love to can. We love to ferment. Like we love doing those things together. So then it was like, we learned about shrubs and then I needed shrubs in my life. And Mindy was like, got you. So she started making tons of different flavors and seeing what she could experiment with. And we're really in touch with like our local producers and farms up in this region because of our previous work. And so it was like, what ingredients could we get our hands on to start experimenting with shrubs? And then, you know, as we took them places, it was like, other people didn't know much about them either and loved that they made a non-alcoholic drink taste complex, but they also just went really well into cocktails to also make them taste great. So it was like a really flexible ingredient that what we say now is creating space at the table for everyone, regardless of your drinking preference. But it's like, we didn't know we were onto that then. Like we were just exploring, right?
No. So we're gonna give the pregnant woman something to drink that makes her feel cocktail-y. Yeah.
Right. So I wanted a ritualistic thing to do at the end of the day, right? And then,
So how does a shrub kind of bring in that kind of cocktail? Because I do think that's kind of the trick and the kind of mocktail thing that people struggle with sometimes is like you look at sometimes a recipe for a mocktail and you're like, well, that's just juice. Like you've just put various juices together. Like, how is that going to have
or
the
that's
same
just seltzer water
flavor of
bitters,
you know,
in it? Right.
Yeah. What is it about a shrub that brings out kind of those flavors?
I love that question. It's the apple cider vinegar and the combination of the sugars and the fruit and just the melody of them all working together. So we like to think of shrubs as like an acid. So when you're cooking or crafting drinks, use it like an acid, like you would a citrus. But it also has this bite, and that's from the vinegar, right? And it gives you that tingly feeling you want in your cheeks when you're drinking a cocktail. It makes it feel adult and interesting.
Reminds you that there's alcohol there.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Real. You do. You get that little bit of the bite and we, that's that apple cider vinegar, but it also is the balance of all the other ingredients that doesn't make it just harsh.
Go ahead.
No, just one really quick add to that is like people oftentimes when we're sampling are like, is there alcohol in this? Like they all of a sudden get like this, like reaction, like they, they thought that there was, and we're like, no, non-alcoholic, non-alcoholic.
After they've knocked back their seventh glass, they're like, oh God, is there alcohol?
It's like a feeding someone like delicious tofu.
Are there specific recipes for this then for shrubs? Like, is there kind of a classic, like these are the baseline shrubs, or is it kind of really experimental? Do you kind of get to play with what you want to do with a shrub and what kind of flavor do you want?
I think it's both. So we have two product lines. We have our mixers that come in glass bottles. They're 16 ounces, and that's the tangy simple syrup that we're talking about. Okay. Those are really playful. They're super fun. They can be as simple or as complicated as you want, but you have all this control to craft and have fun and play with them. So we recommend using them an ounce at a time in whatever you like to drink. So start where you're comfortable, and then you can get as complicated or uncomplicated as you wish. We also have tons of recipes on our website that can help people guide them through that process. But then we also have our cans, which are ready to drink sparkling shrub. It's our shrub plus sparkling water. And all you got to do is crack them open and enjoy them. So wherever you want to meet us, we're ready. We're ready to meet you.
You've reached that is my level of activity. That is perfect right there. I'm just literally unpacked a Blue Apron the other, just right before coming on this podcast. I love a good idiot proof cooking and beverage situation.
We've got subscriptions if you're looking.
And now you will see Siren Shrubs where you go to buy beverages because they are there. Lori. Let's go back to that. So, Mindy, you started making all these shrubs, you know, to keep Lane from going crazy. And I'm gonna take it that you got kind of good at that, you know, and we're finding things that worked for you guys. When did you decide, oh, this has to be a bit like, we have to bring this at that point strange, lesser known, you know, beverage back to the fore?
I think it was when we started to, well, we were still working the farmers markets at that point with our jams, jellies, and things like that. And we decided to start.
Oh, so you were selling other things.
We are selling other things out at farmers markets. And we started sampling shrubs out, and the way people reacted to shrubs, we were giving people this brand new experience, and we thought that was so fun and interesting. And we felt like we were really onto something because, like us, nobody knew what shrubs were. So the moment that we decided to go for it was when we continued to see this look on people's face of like, holy smokes, you just blew my mind a little bit. Like, what is this? Where can I get more?
And you guys are kind of in the Stevens Point area, correct? Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting, I guess, smaller market, right? From, you know, you didn't start this in Madison or Milwaukee, or was it more compelling that people were so interested in it where you were?
I think that I think about this in a few different ways. So like, we are really, I mentioned this before, but we're really intertwined in our local food community. Like the work that we had been doing before this, and because it's a small community, everyone knows everyone, right? And you're very easily, like, you'll walk into the co-op and you're going to see like six people, you know, even if it's just like Tuesday afternoon or whatever. It's just the way it is. And not to say like everybody gets that like small town vibe sometimes when you're in certain like niches or whatever. But I think that being here and having our community behind us gave us a lot of confidence to like, that we at least had a base from the start that was gonna like support what we were doing. And so that wasn't just the people at the farmers market. That was retailers, that was farm partners, that was like restaurateurs. Those were like people that were behind us and were telling us it was a good idea also. It wasn't just like our parents or something.
Although they still support us on all of our Facebook and Instagram.
It's good if your parents support you. But yeah, it is more validating when you have, you know, strangers start to come up
exactly.
But it also takes a little bit of trust, which maybe you also had a little bit of that, you know, because you had been working in the food sphere, where people were like, oh, okay, they're not gonna, you know, steer me wrong. They've made other good things.
This isn't some weirdo who randomly like brewed some grass beer or something like that.
The siren part of the name, not dangerous, right? Like, we're not going to lure you away.
We're not going to kill you.
There's nothing that'll kill you.
Dash you against the rocks when we're done with
just
you.
Keeps coming back to not killing you.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry. This is apparently, I actually really love your brand because to me, I don't know, it's very, you're a female owned company and it's very much like, I think it's taking back, you know, that word siren in a fun
strong
sort of
female
fashion.
Vibes is what we're going
yes,
for.
Yes. Yes. And the lure of the siren is much like the lure
and the power of it, right?
The shrub. Yes. Mm-hmm. Much, much more alluring than the shrubs in your yard.
So you talked about the history of the shrub, and you said it started as like a pickling agent or like kind of in that kind of world.
Yeah. So vinegar is, the best preservative there is. Right. And so back in the day when people, used to have large crops that were about to spoil or, just had a bounty of produce that they didn't know what to do with, they would add sugar and vinegar to them and let it sit and ferment, and then take those syrups to the public houses or to the farm fields for hydration, because vinegar is said to do many things. It was thought to cure many things back in the day. So shrubs became a real staple back in the 1800s.
And shrubs definitely like jazz up your digestive system. So, you know, if you're looking to, make yourself hungry or settle like mm-hmm. a stomach that's been filled with food. You know, I think the vinegar has been used both as kind of a
And people that try the shrubs now will refer to it as an aperitif for sure. So that's interesting.
Do we know why they kind of faded out there? Like, or why was it just because, you know, we moved away from kind of that agricultural, you know, society and there was less of that kind of, you know, preserve based, pickling based stuff? Or was there something else about shrubs?
I mean, we always say like kind of like once refrigeration came around, shrubs kind of went away. And then with the craft cocktail movement, they came back. And now with the really with the mindful drinking movement, they've also gotten an even like deeper place in that beverage movement because of the things we talked about, those complex flavors and what they're able to do, I guess, to enhance your flavor experience in a beverage. And so as far as we know, they weren't killing people and they just went out for a little while and then came back.
No, that makes sense. No, that's really interesting. So you referred to mindful drinking. I assume that's kind of the NA movement that's become really huge over the past, I guess it's a decade, but it might even be less than that. I feel like just over the last 5 years, NA has gone from, you know, something a restaurant might make, you know, basically a Shirley Temple for, to having really thought into their NA options.
Well, I also think it embraces more people. You know, for a while it was kind of like, oh, dry January, like you have to go without alcohol. And I think mindfulness in the drinking sphere now meets everybody wherever they are, whether you've mm-hmm. given up alcohol completely, whether you drink alcohol once a year or once a week, but that whatever you're consuming and however you're consuming it, that it's thoughtful. And not just like, oh, I'm going to go do shots because that's what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, the best way it was described to me is it just provides options for people to meet you wherever you're at, right? Just the options. You have something delicious no matter where you're at and you get to decide. And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that kind of blew up over the past 5 years, that there was this kind of, that it's exploded now to the point that, you know, when we write stuff about mocktails, like people are really interested. It doesn't feel like, you know, it doesn't feel like you're withholding anymore. It feels like
people in Wisconsin are embracing this, which is
famously.
I don't want to overblow it and say shocking, but I guess a little bit so because we just have such a big culture.
Yeah, of drinking. It's ingrained.
I mean, it's
so much to talk about on this. Seriously, I mean, because I think about. Like, I even think just like about the start of our company, like when what problem we were solving and like we were thinking about it in so many ways that weren't the problem that we were actually solving, which was creating opportunity for people to either drink or not drink, but have really yummy things either way. And I think that like over the time that we've owned this company, it really has exploded. And because of like who we're following and the information that we're gathering, I mean, it's really like cracked open our minds into the way that we see our relationship with alcohol. And like, I can now admit, like, I was a heavy drinker for 20 years and like a heavy drinker. And after like, I don't know, infiltrated with all of that messaging, I like started to just, and COVID and like all of these things converging at one time to like start to examine that relationship and like think about it in a more clear-headed way. I also have a small child. Like there's so many things, but like, I think that there's like the health side of it. There's the, like the, you know, toxicity that people are talking about now. Like there's all of these elements that broken down that an individual can, start to like look at. And I think that we're also seeing that the word alcoholism or like the terms alcoholism, like people don't want to be put into that box yet. Lots of people could use examining their relationship with alcohol, even if they don't define themselves as that. So like, there's just, I don't know. I think that it's been a really interesting thing to see and to spread throughout Wisconsin, because I think for Mindy and I, and Mindy should jump in here. Sorry, I'm talking so much, but the outside of Wisconsin feels like it's moving a lot faster. And inside of Wisconsin, we still, I think, don't see it happening as quickly, but that also, like, Midwest kind of gets things a little bit later than the coasts do. And so, but I don't know, it's becoming a more normalized place to just say everybody can be met where they're at and have options. And yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, I think even though it has been a slower to get to the Midwest, we are seeing movement though. And that's been really exciting and fun to be a part of. And another interesting part of the whole movement to me is that it's driven by young people. Mm-hmm. That's what the stats are telling us. And I think that's really cool and interesting. And it feels like a real culture shift just and how cool to be a part of it.
Absolutely.
And you think about it, though, when culture makes big shifts, it's a lot of times a new generation coming in and saying, enough of this trash. You know, or yeah, we don't really want to, you know, we don't really want to do that. And, you know, I think there've been generations that have led us to live our entire lives on social media. And then, you know, again, now there's a backlash maybe we want to actually see people in person.
Yeah.
Well, and we're here or there.
It does feel a lot like the vegan and vegetarian movements as well. Cause for a long time, those got a bad rap because in a lot of cases, there was a kind of resentment isn't the right word, but kind of a like, well, you're taking something away, you know? And that's how kind of NA stuff felt for a long time, where it was like, oh, here's something that we've removed the alcohol from it. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, well, maybe we should embrace what this is as opposed to trying to pretend we're something we're not. You know, why not make really good NA mocktails that taste really good, mm-hmm, rather than just kind of, you know, half-heartedly put something out, or, you know, mm-hmm, kind of make it a last resort thing, you know? And what if we treated this like a canvas rather than something we're being forced upon?
Yeah, not restrictions, but options.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, I think that's a great way to phrase it. Once it became an option rather than a restriction, yeah, then you see people like really move towards vegan, you know, options in restaurants and move towards, you know, mocktails and NA alcohol, or not alcohols, but NA drinking options.
Mm-hmm. I think they also run in parallel because 20 years ago, it was much harder to be a vegetarian, let alone a vegan, because you had to cook most of your food from scratch because there were not products out there.
Oh, and I mean, in the 10 years we've been alive, I mean, I remember like restaurants getting like the, I mean, gluten-free crusts and stuff like that. Yeah. And it was just like wretched. And people would be like, well, I'm not going to eat that way because it is truly deeply cardboard.
It is, and if you wanted to do that, it was so much more work. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so I think we saw a shift when, you know, I mean, vegan cheese has been huge. I think it's like when you talk about Wisconsin things that people can't think about, you know, and
do we like cheese here?
Cocktails were very much the same, you know, nobody was willing to put in the work, you know, to make, there wasn't the demand there, I guess, until there suddenly was for cocktails that actually were, or non-alcoholic or zero proof cocktails that were as good as their counterparts. So mm-hmm, everybody had to walk around with like a glass of sparkling water, or, you know, like, or be really obvious about, you know, like here's my lemonade or here's my Shirley Temple.
Yeah. Yeah. It's or very or obvious drink the I'm not O'Doul's drinking or something like that and be like, hi, it's my not good beer. Yes,
yeah. And I think in both camps, there was a lot of othering, you know, because you were either, mm-hmm, the person who didn't, you know, eat bacon or the person who wasn't drinking the good stuff at the bar.
I love that point though, because I think that the othering is what like we really like really what these like movements are trying to say no to, right? Like, let's just let people be who they are without judgment and shame for being who they are. And that's spanning across and outside of the mindful drinking culture, but it's like that's the seismic shift. That's the like change that we're feeling right now in a lot of areas in this time we're living in. And so I like that way of putting it, like, let's stop with the othering and just start to be inclusive.
Yeah. Well, and I've started to really dislike the word mocktail because.
Well, now you tell me after I've used it 17 times.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. But like, as I've said it out loud or as I've written it down, and I think I've moved mostly to like zero proof or NA, because a mocktail feels like, I don't know, it's like I understand that mock has gotten kind of a bad connotation as words seem to cycle through.
It presents as not the real thing. Like you are drinking, you order a mocktail, you're drinking the shadow of a cocktail. You're drinking the pretend version of a cocktail. And it's like, what if it was just a really good drink that was made? Yeah. What if it was, you know, as thoughtfully crafted as a regular cocktail and stood on its own?
It hits me the same way that authentic does when you talk about food. Like, it's like, well, how is that food? How is that food? You're saying that food is real, like it's been authenticated. And I was like, whose food is not real? Come on. You know, how traditional it is, how much it fits.
Taco Bell, Lori. The answer is Taco Bell is not real. I say that as a fan. I'm allowed.
Yeah. You're allowed. No, it's totally fine. So I love that this has moved in that direction. And I mean, how brilliant on your part, you know, that you got pregnant at such a fortuitous moment.
For real.
And they gave you just enough time, you know, to start working on this so that you could meet all these people where they are.
I mean, if I had had my choice, I would have been pregnant 5 years earlier. So we are lucky. We are lucky.
the fates aligned. Yeah.
That's right.
So, yeah.
I mean, truly, it's been a growing journey for us as individuals, as well as Sire and Shrub Company. So that's been also really neat to have that concurrent journey happening at the same time. Like we've been learning as we go too, and growing as we go.
Yeah. So I want to talk about your work with local farms. Because as you point out, you're really entwined with that, but your entire line is kind of like, it's like each beverage is dedicated to a place, you know, or a farmer or a farm. Was that intentional or did it just happen that way?
It was definitely intentional. Yeah. So we partner with a Wisconsin farm in every flavor we produce. They're usually even so far our friends, not even just farm partners. A lot of them are people we've been connected to for a very long time. And the intention has guided our entire company. So since the beginning, so that intention has actually become vital to everything we do and all the decisions we make and the values that we lead with. Lane, do you have more to add to that?
Is that the local piece? When you say that that's been the lead or the specifically partnering like
with a Wisconsin farm.
Okay.
So that piece has been a real guiding light as far as like what flavors we choose because we live in Wisconsin. So there's not oranges and grapefruits that grow here. So we have to get creative sometimes. And maybe it is that we pair a grapefruit with something that's grown in Wisconsin, but we always have some element of a Wisconsin farm partnership in every flavor we produce.
Yeah. And I would just I mentioned that our past work was in that. So like I moved from Milwaukee to Stevens Point to go into a master's degree in community food systems at UW Stevens Point.
Like, yeah, go Pointers.
And at the time, like I met Mindy working in a local cafe that sourced locally. She was managing one side. I was cooking on the other side. Like, I worked and lived on a farm that grows all of our basil like in 2009, and then worked for a nonprofit that was completely ingrained in growing the local food economy in central Wisconsin. So it's like that part of the business model left that work to do this. And it's like that part of the business model was like the relationships we talked about were ones that we'd been honing. I mean, when Mindy started experimenting with the basil, it wasn't from Tony, the farmer that we ended up buying from, but it was from a friend of ours, Maria and Chris, who just had a ton of basil growing in their greenhouse and gave it to Mindy. And we were like, basil, why would we? Well, that's going to be a weird one, you know? Like, and then Mindy calls me and is like, Link, it's amazing.
It's the best one.
There you go.
Those relationships were like, just always going to be a focal point, right? And so when we started this, and then these other pieces of like how we were defining our business were like we talked very on about scaling, like how are we going to scale and still keep relationships in mind, and like And we've done a slow growth model, so it's been fine. And we've been able to like stay with single origin like flavors so far. But we even talked about like, how do we continue on that road if we, you know, grow beyond our britches or whatever. And so it's just like, that's how, when we talk about it being ingrained, it's always a part of our conversation. And we don't have all the answers, but we have ideas about how we're going to tackle those problems as we continue to grow the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you guys have kind of started on a remarkable model. I mean, you haven't sought out investors, you know, you haven't borrowed loads of cash. You just sort of, well, from the outside, it looks so easy.
No, we can confirm that it's not
very easy. But I was going to say, but I'm never going to be the one to look upon a small business and say, oh, that must be easy, because, you know, but see, you're still smiling and like excited about this. So you're doing something right. I mean, but you started, you know, and was that part of your, just the philosophy, starting out of, you know, keeping things small, keeping things manageable, growing slowly enough where you can actually see maybe where you're going instead of ending up in a place and going, how do we get here?
Yeah.
Well, I think like the way Minnie and I have also like just had conversations around that is, you know, thinking about why we're doing what we're doing and who we want to benefit from it. And we talk about it as building community wealth. And so how we've done that so far is buying from local farms, manufacturing our product in Wisconsin, buying packaging from Wisconsin, like doing those things that keep a local economy, you know, like thriving. And you know, there's always going to be breakers, like times where you have to make a decision based on something in your business that you like have to cut a cost or you have to do this or that. But those are the intentional things that we come at every single time. And when we've thought about money, like we have loans from our like community economic development financial institution. Like we have loans from a personal friend that believes in our mission and what we're doing and that we meet with and like talk to about, but we don't have investors at this time. And when we've explored that, we've thought about it in a way of like bringing more community investors into it as like a community business investment compared to benefiting, and this isn't, you know, being bad about wealthy people, but like just benefiting more wealthy people. Like it's like that's not the goal of our business. It's like we want to spread the love more than, you know, just add to the top, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And slow sustainable growth has always been our path. And so that also allows us to do what we're doing.
Yeah. Well, and that seems to be the hallmark of many smart, small businesses, especially if there's a mission of any sort attached, you know, that there aren't a ton of options for going quickly and hanging onto your pants, so to speak, you know.
Right.
Usually you lose them.
Always hard. Like, having enough cash in a business that's creating a product and putting it on the shelves and inventory based and like having to keep up with that cycle all the time, like cash is really hard. And so it's something that we meet about all the time to figure out what's the next step. How are we going to figure this out? You know, so it's not without its struggle, but so far.
We are still laughing. We are.
Yeah, we're laughing and we're just like, we're figuring it out and we're realizing that so much. It's just often about asking the question and finding the people to like help put you in touch with resources that can fit what your needs are at a certain time, or thinking outside of the box. And so that's what we just continue to do, I think.
Yeah. So let's talk about kind of what you started with and where you've grown to in terms of shrub, like, and give people a sense of like what the flavors of your shrubs are. Mm-hmm. You know, we've mentioned basil, and then I kind of want to get into like, how do you decide what to do next and who to work with, you know, for that particular flavor, you know, cause that's gotta be a process. It's probably, you know, 15 farms. You guys are in central Wisconsin and there are, as I learned over the past 2 years, an amazing and remarkable, there's a remarkable farming community, and pretty friendly at that. But I think it's growing. in this new farm sort of way. You know, like the old family farms are dying off a little bit, but there's so many farmers interested in getting into that area. So, yeah. So what was your first shrub launch?
Yeah. Basil and tart cherry is where we started, followed by a maple ginger. We've done currant. That's now a limited release. So we have this model where you'll always find tart cherry and basil. Always. Okay. Maple ginger too has been a staple for a long time as well. But we have seasonal flavors that we like to play with, which means that we'll make a certain amount, but when they're gone, they're gone. And then we might move on to something else. So right now that's lemongrass and honeycrisp. So those two flavors. And then we have been quarterly, bi-monthly, it depends, releasing these limited release shrubs, which have been in partnership with people or nonprofits or organizations that we love and want to support. So some of the profits go to them. We've done like honey lavender. We're doing a currant right now, which there's only like 30 bottles left of it, a black currant shrub. And it's a very beloved flavor that we launched a long time ago, but had issues with it when we scaled. So we brought it back in a smaller scale and it's been flying out the door. So that's been really fun. We've done strawberry, cacao nib. That was a really interesting one. So the limited releases really allow us to play because they're not as big of a commitment, I guess. And we get to source and make them ourselves. So that's really a fun piece of those flavors.
Is there what flavors are kind of like in the laboratory right now? Like which ones are kind of the ones you're excited and like are hoping to crack? I mean, I don't want to spill any of your secrets either. So don't.
I'll let Lane answer this.
Jeez, well, can I spill our secrets?
Yeah, you can.
You got to give me permission. So there's a couple that we're really excited about, and I think that would be the two that we're probably like most willing to share about right now. One, we have already we actually worked with the farmers last season to reserve the crop, and then are now making it this spring. But that one, late spring, and that one's going to be jalapeno lime.
Ooh, so intriguing!
That one,
that's nice. So
that
good.
One, we had a little event recently to get feedback on some flavors, and that one just like standing ovations all around. So, and I'm not even being awesome. Ridiculous. Like, this one is a keeper. Do not change this. I would drink this all day. Awesome. Like. It was
people are exciting. Loving that like spicy, savory kind of beverage. That's a real kind of trendy flavor right now. That kind of, you know, that little kick of jalapeno in like a margarita or that's really hot right now.
Tastes like a margarita without the alcohol. So whether you add tequila or not is up to you, but it's like you get a margarita no matter what.
Yes. That's okay. A good tagline. That's much better than there's nothing here that will kill you.
Much better than it won't kill you. Yes, definitely.
And then the next one that we're going to be bringing out actually sooner than that, which is going to be our next limited release, is going to be blueberry mint. And that one is going to be a very small run where the jalapeno lime is going to go out through distribution. And it's going to be a little bit bigger. A little bit bigger of a run, but the blueberry mint is another one we're really proud of and really excited about. And that one should actually come out at the end of next month.
Ooh, so, wow. Oh, hey.
Barring no catastrophe, Mindy yeah. don't.
And then we're okay, got to put it out there.
Fingers.
That's right.
And are things coming out like as the shrub, as the glass, as the syrups, or and simultaneously as a ready to drink
no
beverage? Or how does that sort of work?
Yeah, so not all of them work price-wise to go into cans. So right now, our two staples flavors, the basil and the cherry, are both in cans. They'll remain in cans. They'll continue to be in cans. We released the Honeycrisp, and before that, the rhubarb, both in cans also. But it kind of depends on the price point of the shrub mixer. So we have more margin to play with the bottles, less margin to play with the cans. We have double manufacturing. We have all sorts of different things that happen. So while we wish all of our mixers could go into cans, they cannot.
We did release a really fun sparkling shrub in October, which is a coffee shrub. We met at a local cafe and we used to drink something called Bee Bombs, which is lemonade and espresso. And we just
which is
them.
Which is really good.
Oh, it's so good.
I've never heard it called that. but I've actually experienced it at a local coffee shop here. Yeah.
It's like nutty and refreshing, and it's delicious. So hard to describe, but it's delicious. The flavors go so well together, but the apple cider vinegar and the coffee in the shrub taste just like that. So for us, this was like a really fun flavor to release, and it was in partnership with Ruby Coffee Roasters, who's a friend in town.
Nice. Is that still around?
Yeah, it is. You can get it online only. Well, that's not true. It's out in retailers too, but mostly online.
I was going to say, you might have to, we might have to drive closer to you to find it. Maybe. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, that's a nice challenge.
Yeah, and then you had asked.
Because I'll have to find that one. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's super cool. And you had asked earlier, like, how we decide the farms. So that's also been a fun and interesting thing, because sometimes they've decided or asked us about whether or not we would experiment with an ingredient. That's how our lemongrass came to bear. And then other times we come up with a flavor and then start to seek out those partnerships. And so it really does depend. But the cool thing is, like, with these limited releases, we've been able to, because we'll be able to, I don't know, spread the love by involving more farms. It also comes down sometimes to, like, can they grow it at a certain scale, or is it going to be small enough scale that it won't matter and they can just, you know, grow it within their regular lineup of crops? How far ahead of time do we need to know? Like, that, as we've grown, is mind-boggling. Like, trying to figure out, will we have enough of XYZ to get us through to next year, since we're working in a seasonal, you know, like in a seasonal time frame of getting product. So, like, this year we got, or last year we got jalapenos to make the jalapeno lime shrub this year. And now we have to plan for enough jalapenos in this harvest to make all of next year's. So it's like I don't know, it's a puzzle, a fun puzzle, maybe fun.
Yeah. Well, and it's fun because people don't know that you can grow things like lemongrass there. Like, yeah. I had too much of my landscape dedicated to lemongrass. Like, I don't know, probably a couple of years ago. It was first, I knew it grew here, but it was first time I had grown it. So I bought more plants than I needed. So I feel like I was giving it away to restaurants, like literally, like awesome. Here.
You were dealing grass, Lori? You were dealing lemongrass?
Because I had no idea that it was going to just go crazy.
Yeah.
As long as the summer got hot enough, it apparently really liked my raised beds. So,
and it spreads, right? Like grass, right?
Yeah. And it spreads. And even just one little clumpy plant gives you more lemongrass than, you know, your average. I mean, if I were making curry every single day, I could maybe use up the lemongrass I grew. I froze a bunch of it. I did all these things, but, you know, people don't know you can grow things like that here. Mm-hmm. I've also heard, and I don't know that you would, have you found a farmer who will make the sacrifice of growing ginger for you? Like is your ginger local? Because I know that cannot grow in this climate unless it's assisted by greenhousery.
Yeah. But we have, but it's like way too high of a price for.
Yeah, that's
like
what I
wondered. They have to charge a certain amount for it, and that makes total sense. But then, like, it, like, in a value added product, it's like way.
Well, and for a flavor component like a botanical like that, I can't imagine.
So in our maple ginger, it's the maple syrup that is our Wisconsin ingredient, and that's kind of what I was talking about. How we can, like, some, if we can be playful. As long as we have one ingredient that is Wisconsin sourced.
Yeah. Oh, no. And that makes complete sense. I don't think there's, you know, there's any guilt or shame in, you know, like reaching beyond, you know, we'd have a very bland world if we, you know, I mean, when you talk about, I mean, I remember in the early 2000s when people were doing like that. I'm only going to eat things within 50 miles of my house, right? Mm-hmm. And that was a really interesting, like, exercise. But wow, like, you get to the point where you're like, well, if you're serious about that, like, where are you going to find salt, you know, and pepper? Right.
And the spice trade. Like,
how far do you drill down?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, there's, yeah, right. And I mean, we come from those roots, right? Like we come from that local and like want to and value that in the things that it does to create community and that, you know, and by keeping those things in a circular economy. But there are so many things in this economy that you are getting, like either is like, so you do it with your food. Well, look at all of the other things you consume in your life. You're not doing that. So like you can really, you can only be an idealist in like, and go so far before you just seem like kind of a jerk, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say, well, and it does all of a sudden just kind of get really elite and funny.
Yeah, exactly.
To be able to, you know, live a lifestyle without, you know, all these things.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the place where I start thinking like, and globalism is good because we need to be in, you know, in contact with people who are different from us. And if we didn't trade spices, like, nobody would have bothered, you know?
Yeah, right.
So that's good too. So what's been your biggest challenge and also your biggest and maybe most unexpected victory kind of going along? This is sort of an impromptu question. So we don't have that fully.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the beginning for me, the biggest challenge was just understanding what it meant to scale a business. Like a food business. I don't think I had any idea really what we were embarking on until we embarked on this adventure and learning the challenges of scaling a business, especially within our value set, as far as how we source ingredients and things like that. That's the challenge that pops up in my head, at least.
I mean, I can agree. Like Minnie and I, like, we now call ourselves a beverage company. Like we never considered ourselves a beverage company when we started. Like what? That was
woo.
No. You know, like, and now we're like, oh my God, we started a beverage company. Why? What are we doing? That's like a beverage company. That's like what Shark Tank's like, don't start a beverage company. What are you doing? Like, I mean, I agree with her for sure. In like that, oftentimes it's like, holy, I mean, there's a new beverage coming out every other second, millisecond. I don't know.
Yeah. Millisecond.
But that's also what makes it. I think that's also what's enabled this movement, like to more intentional, you know, because there weren't this many options before, you know, I mean,
right.
No shrubs, you know, that was the era of, you know, I don't want no shrubs. Right. Well, I didn't sing it. You were spared because I did not sing it.
I like that. Thank you.
But yeah.
I would say our biggest.
That pun isn't getting no love from me, I'll tell you, Lori.
Oh my God.
Like, I'm just going through.
We are canceling this podcast, Lori.
Hilarious. It's become a karaoke podcast.
Oh, in case you didn't know.
Oh, I could get down with that.
We absolutely
will invite you back next week.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's going to be a party now.
Yeah.
I was ill prepared for the pun. Just kind of broken now.
Sorry.
I'd say our biggest success so far is A, that we're still here, and B, that we're still like love each other deeply, and that we still manage all of the crisis with like staring each other in the eye and figuring it out.
You're here. I agree with that.
I mean, we've talked about that with other people, the kind of difficulties of working in collaboration with people you like. And it's like being a roommate where it's like, you know, oh, I like you outside of this, but oh no, we have to like share a house now, or like we have to share a business vision. And it's nice to see that, you know, you two started this out as friends, and I either you're great actresses or you seem to both really, really like each other still. So that's nice to see. How's that? And that process has been good working with, you know, someone you're friends with.
Yeah. I think right out of the gate, we said that we have to be able to have uncomfortable conversations. And I think that is what has helped us, grow and learn and be able to do this together, because we have hard moments for sure, but most of the moments are, I just feel so lucky to be supported by my best friend in business. Like, how lucky is that to get to work with somebody you love and that supports you in a way that your coworker from the office job you had prior to this. Did it, you know, I don't know. It's just different. It's just really, it's not lost on me how lucky it is to have that type of support in my job as well as in my personal life.
Awesome. And more people know what shrubs are now than they did 4 years ago.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And we're working on it.
But it's interesting because you're not the only shrub company to have come about either. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is sort of a thing that's happening. I mean, you know, it makes sense because you read about it, I think, in the New York Times, you said, you know, and there was a company, you know, in Michigan, and there was, so, you know, but I just feel like I'm seeing them crop up all over the place. I bought someone a siren shrub the other day at one of the local eateries that carry them. I'm trying to think if it was the Food Hall or if it was, anyway. That is neither here nor there. And I said, taste this. It's from Wisconsin. they were like, what? We have a shrub company here? I was like, yep, we do.
Well, thanks. There's a couple other shrub companies in Wisconsin now that that are growing too. So Mad Maiden Shrubs in Madison has been around longer than we have. And there is another shrub producer that is just wonderful. Her name's Lydia from Living Full Kombucha, and she's out of like the Kenosha Racine area. I could be getting that.
I did hear about her because that I don't usually want to compare kombucha because they're completely different things. Yeah, and people have, if someone doesn't like kombucha, I don't want them to decide that shrubbery is bad. but that was an interesting, I think I've read something maybe about her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of making that switch, which to me is an interesting. She's just doing them both at the same time.
Yes,
that's maybe smart.
In the shrub line,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So you get the kombucha people and the shrub people, which aren't necessarily the same.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, we're all about other people selling shrubs too, because we need help getting the word out.
But I was going to say, the more people make shrubs, yes. So. Well, I love it. I love that you decided to make shrubs. Is there anything else people need to know before they embark on, you know, tasting their first shrub or, you know, experimenting?
I think I would just say, even if you're vinegar adverse, to not count shrub out, because it's not like taking a shot of apple cider vinegar in the morning for health reasons. It's like, it's just much more delicious than that.
Well, and I feel like you have control over this in the sense that it's kind of like a drink. If it's too strong, you just have, you have a dilution quotient, you know, like, especially if you buy, you know, a glass jar, a glass bottle full of shrub where you can create your own ratio.
Yep.
Make it stronger. 'Cause some people, it's like strong, sweeter, less sweet, you know, more vinegary, less vinegary. Because some people really do like that punch. And I think that that's where you see on like on the kombucha spectrum, you know, the people who like the really vinegary tasting kombucha. And then the people who like it where no, it's all the sugar is not eaten away yet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, where we're on the sweeter, more fruity side of that.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And then, go ahead.
I was just going to say that I think I would leave people with, you know, having a bottle of shrub just in your house. Then when you invite people over, you just automatically have something that both anybody can have, and you didn't have to try hard. And if people aren't drinking, if they are drinking, you can mix up a really cool drink, for both of those people really, really easily with just that one ingredient and some soda water and, you know, a spirit, if that's the way you're going, and maybe a bottle of bitters, you know, or some citrus. So.
And that's plus,
then you get to be like the cool, smart person who's like, "Oh, and this is shrub in it," and the person's like,
"I plan for everything."
Yeah, yes. And then they're like, "What's a shrub?" And then you get to be like, "Well,
exactly." And then you get to be the smartest person in the room.
I do like to be profoundly smug at parties, so I need this.
In 2010, the thing was keep a bottle of kava in your fridge because it's sparkling wine. It's a celebration. You know, it's accessible to everyone and not so expensive, right? Mm-hmm. I learned this from someone in the wine industry, of course. But that was sort of a thing. Like, keep a bottle of bubbly on hand because, you know, you'll be ready for a party at any moment.
Yeah.
And now we'll just have to change that. It should be just keep a bottle of shrub.
Yep. Yep. Huh. And you can also make a really good salad dressing. So there's
that. Well, now we're getting into multi-purpose stuff, and that's genius.
Yeah. And Mindy has tons of recipes on her website.
In that way, just like bitters.
And that is a perfect lead into the most important question. That's actually a nice lead into the most important question that we ever ask on this podcast, which is, where can people find Siren Shrubs? Where can people find you both in the real world and on the internet?
In the real world, on our website, you can go to our Where to Buy, which is located at the bottom of our website, and type in your zip code, and it will pop up a retailer near you or multiple retailers near you, or you can order directly from us online.
SirenShrubs.com.
Which is also awesome.
And we're on social, and there's tons of recipes that Mindy is always sharing. So if you ever have that bottle of shrub and sitting in your refrigerator and you don't know what to do with it, then there is about a bazillion recipe videos for you to watch and just get entangled in and be like, oh, I'm just loving this, watching Mindy make these all these great cups.
It is actually, I will say, it is very satisfying watching people make drinks. That is a rabbit hole I fell down during the pandemic, was just like ASMR-like videos.
ASMR, yes.
Of just like people like, you know, not saying anything, but just like making a drink, you know, putting the ice cubes in the glass, and you're just like, this seems great. This is very soothing.
And do we need to start doing that as one of our hashtags?
Yeah, you're right. We do. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
It's a lot better than our other marketing ideas today.
Totally, way better.
There's a couple of golden nuggets in this conversation.
I'll take ownership.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for chatting with us today and educating us on the world of shrubbery and shrubs. And I'm very excited about all these new developments and all these redevelopments, which is bringing back the shrub and all that. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
Let's call the podcast. That was an awesome conversation. I love conversations where I come away and I'm like, I learned things today, which is all of the conversations we have on this podcast. But I really like,
I come away,
I'll be honest, legitimately had no idea what a shrub was. And now here I am to talk with people about shrubbery.
Yes.
And make a great Monty Python pun. And I appreciate them letting us be goofy and let us make It Won't Kill You the running joke of the podcast.
Which,
if I was a small business owner, I would maybe be trepidatious about letting that be the center of a conversation.
I think they've gotten this far, you know, making something, you know, this is called a shrub. I'm not sure the word shrub sells it, right?
I think the next phase is rebranding the word shrub, I think.
Yeah, it's like the dried plum, the prune. In the 80s, I think, when people started to be constipated again,
constipated before the 80s?
I'm just kidding. No, because everyone ate.
The great constipation wave of the 80s.
In the great constipation, everyone ate prunes. And then they decided they needed to rebrand them. So they rebranded them dried plums because we didn't like the word.
That's prune. Not better. That's not better. We can come up with a better phrase than dried plums.
Oh, I would agree. Well, and I don't understand what was wrong with prune, except that prunes became, I think, associated with like, oh, you had to be old. Resemble the prune.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We're gonna get our branding minds together, and we're gonna come up with a new name for a shrub, and we're gonna come up with a new name for a prune, and we're doing the Lord's work. Also, we need to have a conversation about aubergine and eggplant, because I've been watching. Great British Baking Show, The Professionals on Netflix, which is very amusing. It is great television to fall asleep to. And they were making something with aubergine, and I was like, just call it eggplant. Or we need to decide whether to call it aubergines or eggplants. We can't have both. We gotta choose
that's
one.
That's like spelling gray with an E or an A.
I hate that too. We as a society need to agree on whether it is gray with an E or gray with an A.
It's eggplant in the United States. And it's.
And I understand. I'd be fine if they made an aubergine.
Aubergine if you're French.
British, I think, isn't it?
But it's a European.
French base, yeah. But like, and I get that because you look at an eggplant, it does not look like an egg. Like, I would not, if I saw a purple, you know, plant coming out of the ground, I would not think, oh, it's an egg. Like, maybe, like, I'd be fine with recalling it aubergine. At least, you know, I don't know what aubergine means.
Well, but then there's little white eggplants that look exactly like eggs.
But that's not what people think of when they think of eggplants,
no,
Lori.
No, they think of the emoji.
Yeah, well, that's a completely different situation altogether that we're not going to get into because this is a family podcast.
I don't want no shrub. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, we've spent too much time talking about eggplants and dried plums.
Yeah.
So let's leave. Lori, as always, thank you. Where can people find the Food Crush Podcast?
You can find the Food Crush Podcast on social media. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you should watch out because there's a very real possibility that on that Facebook app, we might just be tasting some shrubs in the near future.
I think there may be some shrub sampling, mm-hmm. some shrub sipping
all shrubs.
It's going to be a shrub a dub dub.
I think there's a song. That.
There's got to be something. There we'll is. Come up with. Well, I do want some shrubs. The shrub is the kind of guy that can get some love for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hanging out the side
That's
of my
side of
liquor,
trying to holler.
Trying to
holla. Yeah, oh, we'll come up. We can maybe eat some holla. Okay,
wait. We are desecrating the legacy of TLC right now.
Well, I love TLC and I love the shrubberies and the siren shrubs. So, but yes, so where can people find you?
You can find me at A Man About Film on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And Lori, where can people find you one more time?
Also, all of those places. Usually with, you know, a picture of food somewhere.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you to our wonderful guests. Thank you to our wonderful producer. Thank you to my wonderful co-host, Lori Frederick. And as always, so very much thank you all who listen to this podcast. We really appreciate it. We wouldn't do it without you.
Y'all ain't no scrubs or scrubs.
Y'all are definitely not scrubs.
Nope.
Y'all
are shrubs.
Chase water, but be sure to not chase waterfalls. Anyways,
shrubs.
This is
shrubs,
been,
not scrubs.
Shrubs, not scrubs.
That's a great tagline.
I think that's our title. Scrubs. Anyways, this has been the Food Crush Podcast, and I don't want no scrubs. Bye, everybody.